it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Hello and welcome to the Wisden Cricket World Cup Daily Podcast. This episode is brought to you by Scene, who we've partnered with to deliver all of our England daily podcasts and videos for the rest of the 2023 World Cup. Starting next week on Wisden.com, Scene will be powering our new interactive videos, allowing you to easily skip to certain segments and find relevant articles, offers and opportunities by simply clicking directly within the video. England are on the verge of crashing out of the 2023 World Cup after being absolutely walloped by Chris Silverwood's Sri Lanka at the Chinnaswamy. I'm Yaz Rana, and with me today is birthday boy Phil Walker.
Hey.
And just finishing marking out his long run, Mark Butcher. Reverse Lap asks, has the white ball revolution revolved too much? Well, they're not out of it just yet.
4%.
4% chance. I think that is still a bit generous.
I don't know what I'm sadder about, actually. The end of what has undoubtedly been England's greatest ever one-day international era, or the fact that they could still qualify. Because I'm not sure I could take watching too much more of that. It was possibly the worst defence of a title since Rocky Balboa came up with the head-first defence against Apollo Creed in the Rocky movies.
He bounced
back. Horrendous. Yeah, well, at least he swung a few punches back.
But it's still good to happen.
We know that. He bounced back.
India on Sunday.
That's your Dolph Lundgren, definitely.
Butch, England's tapestry of farcical World Cup exits is as rich as anyone else's. But this might be the most spectacular. Can you make sense of that batting performance?
It was horrendous. Look, got off to the sort of flyer that you'd come to expect and kind of settled down into the armchair and watched the first four or five overs and thought, okay, here we go. Batting first, good call. Johnny and Milan sort of stroking it to all parts, and it looked as though, okay, we're back in the old routine again. And then, you know, a change of pace, really. Angelo Matthews and spin coming into the attack, and suddenly England are completely and utterly all over the place. One of the things that And I flagged this a long, long time ago. The argument around sort of like the 100 and the 50 over competition being moved into a very much a sort of an afterthought, a second tier tournament, was always going to throw up the issue around players in the future, in particular, who've hardly played any 50 over cricket, knowing the difference or understanding the importance of a one or a two in 50 over cricket. T20 cricket, 100 ball cricket. Basically, the opposition give you singles. There are gaps all over the place. You hit the ball as hard as you can through those gaps, looking for boundaries. As soon as you find yourself in a situation where the opposition is on top on a 50-over game, 50 overs is a game which you can get bowled out in, as we've amply proved, suddenly the single, being able to score in a low-risk fashion, becomes incredibly important. See Virat Kohli, for example. See the way that he was able to turn a 2 runs for 3 wicket deficit into an easy stroll when India beat Australia. They did that by making 4 or 5 runs and over, no risk whatsoever, and the opposition had no chance of being able to get in there. Look at the way that South Africa have played in the tournament so far. Yes, all the headlines are grabbed by the people like Klaassen and Jansen at the back end of the innings, but it's been built around, you hit the bad balls for 4 and you nudge and you score off the other stuff in a low risk fashion. That's 50 over cricket, unless you're playing on the flattest of roads. And so therefore, with this group of players who should know better because they've played a lot of 50 over cricket, have been able to get back into that rhythm. And players in the future, the ones who are at the moment on the England radar who will take over from this squad because they're all in 30 plus, none of them will make it none of the ones who played in the game today will make it to the next World Cup. Those players will have no opportunity to work their game in a way that involves scoring runs, still scoring runs, in a fashion whereby your wicket is not at risk, i.e. trying to slog the ball out of the park. And what happened to England today was the field came in tight, Sri Lanka fielded brilliantly, you've got five men at least inside the circle, and we weren't skillful enough to be able to hit the ball beyond them, run the ball around them, in order to give ourselves an opportunity to keep the scoreboard ticking over. It went from tens to nothing. And that is, there is the skill of 50 over cricket. 50 over batting is revolves around that. And then, of course, you have your explosions at the end. And unfortunately, England have not been able to do that. I mean, today was so bad. It really was. And they know it. There's nobody watching that will be able to come up with any excuse for players of that sort of quality and experience to play in the way that they did. But it was so, so bad.
Mm. Phil, this is a team full of guys who've won two World Cups. Loads of experience, as Mark says. Every single player is in their 30s. They've not just got loads of experience. They've got loads of experience of playing cricket in India. So many of them are just out of nick. You asked before we started recording, does that just happen sometimes? And I can't remember a side this good suddenly have its entire batting lineup look out of nick at the same time. It looks like they've almost forgotten how to play ODI cricket.
Well, I think you might have landed on it right on your final line there. They are so out of practice, and they've been so complacent in assuming wrongly now, because the evidence is overwhelming that one format just bleeds into another. That's been emphatically disproved in the last few weeks. Mark's bang on to talk about the specific and almost unique components of batting in 50 over cricket. 50 overs is a long time. A long time in modern cricket.
It's not the way we've been playing.
No, sure. I mean, you know, one silver liner on my birthday. It's 3:15 and we're already recording a show that should have gone out about 6:00. Anyway, no doubt that they have been guilty of disrespecting, maligning the format. And that is the most glaring problem that I can envisage. And again, Mark's right to talk about the consequences for the next generation, because, you know, Stokes, Bairstow, Root, they've played 200 List A games. So you'd think the muscle memory would have kicked in. And perhaps there is an element, going back to your question, of this almost bizarre collective collapse of form and therefore confidence, which is not to excuse, but there's a possible residual reason there. But what it means for the next lot, that's the bigger question, right? I just had a look just now. Ollie Pope and Zach Crawley, to pick out two of the best young players, made their List A debuts 7 years ago and 6 years ago, respectively. Pope's played 31 games in 7 years, and Crawley's played 28 games in 6 years. Now, that is a pretty deep... it's a degradation of responsibility, right? You know? And I remember Pope saying, after he'd made a Test match 100 at Port Elizabeth, and I'm saying, so what's the next 12 months look like? Yeah. Easy peasy question. And he said, well, I'm desperate to play 50 over white ball cricket, but I'm not able to. And that was his first response. It wasn't about franchises. It wasn't about Test match runs. It was about wanting to become the best player he can possibly be. He not had any chance to do so.
Mm.
The freedom and the liberation that has underscored the Test match team seems to have filtered into the 50 over setup. We'll just keep going harder, lads. Keep going harder. Well, just as it was an oversimplification in the Test team, and if you were to actually speak to McCullum or Stokes about it, they would say, well, hold on, it's actually a lot more nuanced and sophisticated than that. It seems like there's just been a reversion to those baseline statements with this current team. And you end up looking, you lampoon yourself.
Mm.
You know, just keep going harder, boys. Don't leave anything out there. All that sort of nonsense. The lack of clarity in how they went about it today, combined with a sort of slapstick horror, and your heart does sort of go out to them, right? You know, when everything's going wrong, you still find other things to go wrong on top of it. It's amazing how it works, right? Two runouts, your best player just gets sent down the river. Joe has batted with Johnny Bairstow since they were 6 years old. You know what I mean? And still it happens.
There's something about Yorkshire and the white line, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Do they not tell them? Do they not paint them up there? Is it too costly or something?
Yeah, and you know, the Adil Rashid dismissal is, as Atherton said on the TV, bang on, symptomatic of a malaise that's run through the whole team. Overall, though, at the moment, it remains inexplicable. Books will need to be written about this. Studies will need to be done. Because nobody, one or two people beforehand said, all right, an oldish team, one or two injuries, Stokes struggling with his knee, Bairstow, etc. Perhaps certain medium pacers, it was a slightly kind of staged squad selection. Brook wasn't in it. So there was some murmurs, but no one said... No one said anywhere near this, did they?
No. I think in this room, talking about your top fours, England were in it. Everyone, not a single person thought they wouldn't make the semi-finals. Winning it would have been, I think I made a huge statement that it would be as big as, you know, us winning, well, I can't remember what it was, as big as winning something big, win a World Cup in India.
You said it'd be the biggest achievement of this white ball era.
Yeah, of this white ball era. Yeah, absolutely. And I stand by that. And what's happened since has kind of made it seem like a pretty, you know, no, I wasn't really sticking my neck out.
But it'd be quite something if they did it from here.
It would be quite, you know, this and as I said, they still, unbelievably, they still can. But, you know, listening to Mott at the back end there, they've given it away, haven't they? We're not giving it away, but they know they can't. They can't raise themselves from this. It was just that today was so pitiful, unfortunately. Mm. And I do feel for them all, because, you know, most of these guys, you know, Johnny Bairstow 34, Milan 36, Root 32, Stokes 32, a couple of young'uns, you know, Bairstow 33, Livingston at 30 was the youngest bloke in the team. Mm. Moeen Ali 36. It's all of their. It's their last hurrah in the white ball thing, and quite a few of them won't make it to the T20 World Cup either, even though that's just next year. Mm.
So the whole 11 were 30 something.
Yeah,
today.
Every single the one, first time that's ever happened in a World Cup game, and only the third time that's ever happened in an ODI.
Blimey!
But did you know that Andrew Matthews was A, still playing international cricket, and B, was at the World Cup?
Was still bowling either? Oh yeah, I mean yeah, it was a little bit of a surprise to see him take the ball. It has to be said. And, you know, he bowls five overs for nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, look, Sri Lanka played with a desperation that belied their position at the bottom of the table. You know, they've qualified as well. I suppose there's one thing as far as Sri Lanka are concerned, and we're talking about the lead-ups to the competition. They got to the final of the Asia Cup. They had to qualify. So they're kind of, you know, they've played a lot of 50-over cricket. They've not covered themselves in any glory up to this point either. But they played with a sort of desperation and a gleam in their eye that this was kind of last chance saloon that England simply didn't. You know, even when we got them two down for 20, I didn't sense there was this kind of like this enormous, right, come on, everyone's surging towards the middle. This is our chance. Let's do this from here. And, you know, that pressure lasted for about an over. I think it was kind of like it was all over, you know, and the partnership. That, you know, between the Sanker and Samawick Rama that got them through was as simple as you like. There was just no pushback from England whatsoever. They are cooked.
Matthews was, so he was parachuted into the squad following the injury to Pathirana. That was the first time he had a bowl in ODI cricket since before the pandemic, and he took two.
Which tells you that we're talking nonsense. You don't have to play the game at all. just rock up. And
I thought it was a really canny move from Kusal Mendes to bring on Tikshana and then Matthews, because England obviously were enjoying the pace that was coming onto the bat, and then, as you said, they went absolutely nowhere.
And that's been a story for the last few weeks against spin, and especially spin that kind of zips off the surface,
yeah.
You know, flattish spin, front of the hand kind of spin. They have been clueless, and they were so collectively out of rhythm that Stokes was even missing kind of easy off the hip for one type shots, and he was looking at himself as baffled as anybody else, right?
Yeah, but I guess my question,
they went nowhere.
My question is, I completely get your point about England have really struggled to rotate the strike even against the spin, but Tikshana bowled 50 deliveries and then there was only one boundary. Sri Lanka lost two early wickets. Rashid came on early, and Nisanka, who's not the most aggressive batter in the world, launched him for six over mid on fifth ball of his spell. England, as you just said, have not taken risks against spin this tournament, other than the Bangladesh game and other briefly against Ravindra in the New Zealand game. England have got stuck repeatedly against Bin. This is where I almost see where what Moeen said yesterday about England needing to go harder. Because
but these are the same. These are the same players who, in the cycle up to the last World Cup, were the best scoring against Spin in the entire universe. Hmm. So you can't tell me that suddenly they've had a big meeting and decided, oh, you know what, lads, we're not gonna hit the ball for six today when we can. We're just gonna block it instead. That's not it.
So what do you think's happened? Well, I agree with you. They haven't decided.
Pressure has come come upon them. And it's sort of a lack of because that lack of confidence throughout the squad, they're kind of not trusting the fact that it doesn't matter if I get out because the next guy will come in and smash it instead. Mm. Which is what the ethos of Owen Morgan was built around was, don't worry about it. You don't have to soak up any pressure because the next guy will come in and he'll go hard. You know, we'll find somebody that can do it. They've realised that none of them are in any nick. So all of a sudden you start not wanting to hand it over to the next guy. And then that's when the skill to be able to rotate the strike comes around. So you don't invite pressure upon yourself or the people coming in behind you. You know, that you look back to that the first game against New Zealand. And that for me was kind of, if Owen Morgan had still been captain, for example, of the New Zealand game, right? What would they have done in the second game? They would have come out and they would have gone harder than they did. Their problem, again, the New Zealand game, was not that they didn't go hard enough. It was that they kept slogging it up in the air and only got 280 in the end. Mm. On what looked like a flat pitch, they got off to a fabulous start and they did what they have always done and it didn't work, right? In the old days, that doesn't work. Owen Morgan fronts up with a press and goes, you know, they'll say, oh, well, you know, you kind of gave it away there today. You probably should have made 350. You go, yeah. He'd probably say, yeah, we probably should have made 350, but we'll go just as hard the next time. There won't be any sort of discernible change. Whether or not there has been a chat in the dressing room that has made them decide that they're not going to do that, nobody will know and they won't tell us. What I will say is the decision to win tosses and decide to bowl first. They did the right thing today. They did the right thing today. They just played unbelievably badly doing it. But those things, deciding to put chases upon yourselves when they're not a very good chasing side, has perhaps destroyed confidence in the batting lineup that then translated itself into today.
We talked a little bit about how Butler has been transmitting a message of wanting to play this brand of attacking cricket, but his actions don't necessarily radiate that. And today they drop their most attacking batter this tournament so far, just after they've talked about wanting to play this brand of cricket. Were you surprised that Brooke didn't play?
I was. I don't agree with it. I didn't agree with it at the start. But I've spoken about Brooke every week for the last 4 weeks, and I keep trying to tell myself that he's going to become a top player very, very soon in 50-over white ball cricket. But he's only really performed on one day, so it's a flimsy position that I'm in for sure. I could understand the reasoning to bring back Livingston and Mo, so at least now you've got options. You've got three and a half spinners, including Root as well. Potentially,
the only issue with that is that you kind of you've left out Livingston in the previous game when I fully expected him to play, right? You bring Moeen back in, who should be one of your frontline bowlers. He's a more experienced and probably arguably a better bowler than Leon Livingston. So they could have just brought in Mo and left Harry Brooke and still had the same batting. They didn't need to bring Livingston back in.
Which would have been my selection. As I've said all along, if your bowlers are ineffectual, then you may as well recognise that and accept it. If everyone is going between 6.5 and 7.5 and over,
I take that at the moment.
Sure, but you know what I mean? Then you look for your points of difference, and Harry Brooke is a game changer at number 5-6. And
the only bloke who's looked in any nick.
Right, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, played okay for 20-odd the other night, got a good one, but obviously made a good 60. And the only one to actually look like he had a clarity of thought in the New Zealand game is just that he skewed one up in the air, made 25 in 16 balls. I'd have picked him here, but look, you're shuffling the chairs.
That's not why they lost.
No, it is not. But Liam Livingston is an interesting case study, right? And we spoke a lot about him in the build-up to this tournament. And I said something along the lines of how he goes will indicate how well England are going to go. But if you look at his story again, he's been selected almost entirely on 20-over cricket form, where his raison d'etre with the bat, and I know it's complicated by what he does with the ball, and I don't knock him being in this squad for the full package, but he's a one-dimensional hitter, over straight mid wicket and square leg in 20 over cricket. And sometimes it works and sometimes it works spectacularly. And he's eminently clippable. You know, he'll stick a ball out of Headingley and it will appear on Twitter and so on and so on. But there is no nuance, there's no subtlety, and there's no real batsmanship, or there's scant evidence of that in his story up until now. Now, I know he made the good 90 against New Zealand. That was an absolute outlier. Now, this is not entirely his fault because he's hardly played any of it either. You know, he's the face of the 100. So he's coming in, batting in the fulcrum. He's batting in the Dhoni position, right?
Yeah.
Number six.
Michael Bevan. Liam Livingstone.
Right, yeah.
Both bowl a bit of filthy wrist spin.
And his shot today drove me potty because I just thought it was, I don't want to put words in because it would be unfair on the lad, right? But the shot was not the shot of a number six, right? And it was the shot...
With your team up the creek. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was the shot of a player who understands 20 over cricket and the one dimensional specific role that he occupies in it.
Mm.
But that is a world away from what was required in the here and now. And his record with the bat is... It's impossible to justify his position in the team. Certainly in the top six. In the top eight, perhaps. Top nine.
But what have you made of England's general attitude towards this World Cup? Less than a year ago, Root decided to play in the ILT20 over an ODI series against South Africa, in effect meaning that he wouldn't play any ODI cricket for 14 months leading up to the New Zealand series. Moeen Ali and others complained about an ODI series against Australia just off the T20 World Cup, which sort of made sense, but a lot of them then jetted straight off to the Abu Dhabi T10 straight after that. What do you make of that from players who are, you know, very successful?
That success is perhaps part of the issue. So is the fact that nearly all of these guys are as long in the tooth as they are. It's a little bit like the in the days before remote controls, the old man sat on the couch watching something on TV that he has no interest in watching because he couldn't be bothered to get up and find the remote. You know, it's that type of thing. No, the bilateral series are they're too boring. They're too far away. They're too close to other formats. Whatever the rest of it might be, so the players can take some flack for the way that they've treated the format. Also, you know, the lack of any sort of meaningful 50 over cricket in the part of the summer where you'd kind of think it was important for everybody, not just the England players. And of course, you know, even if we look at the way that the schedule works, most of those guys wouldn't have played any domestic stuff anyhow. They wouldn't have. But and I've said this on the pod before, so excuse me, listeners, if I'm repeating myself, but the sort of hubristic way in which the entire 50 over format has been treated ever since winning it in 2019 leaves you in a position where it would have been an absolute travesty had we managed to defend our title, let alone get to the semi-finals. It really would. And, you know, those of us who have been around this sport and played this sport for long enough know that you treat cricket with sort of disrespect and disdain at your own peril because it will come back and bite you on the backside.
1,000,000%.
I thought there was a sadness today, Phil, in that this is becoming such a feeble end to one of the most watchable English cricket teams ever. They have been one, so successful, and two, just so fun to watch for a decade. And a lot of these guys won't play ODI cricket again after this tournament. And this is such an inappropriate ending for what they've done.
And they've still got another 3.5 weeks of it, travelling all over one of the vastest, biggest countries on the planet. And this is further evidence that cricket is the cruelest sport by 1,000,000 miles.
It feels like an Ashes tour, doesn't it?
It does.
It really feels like an Ashes tour.
Yeah, and I asked Butch beforehand, and he's obviously no stranger to a tough Ashes tour, but you were going to play a great cricket team, and you were hoping not to get whacked, and... One year, one tour, you actually did all right and almost got to Perth with the thing still running. But the point is, you didn't really expect to get much out of it because you were a slightly and sometimes significantly inferior team to one of the great teams ever. What makes this a deepening mystery the more we talk about it is that there is so little explanation for it. Joss Butler has got out in the same way now, I think, in four games straight. Yeah. But it would be devastating if that is the vignette, right? If that's the sort of... the motif of the latter stages of his England career, because he changed the English game. he'll always have that legacy. He's lifted a trophy. He's lifted two trophies. But look, when it's done, it becomes a brutal place to be, right? Yeah. And I always remember Atherton saying, but you'd echo this, Mark. And when you it hits you hard when you're over the hill, you can just about keep your footing until you can't, and then you tumble fast to the bottom.
Yeah.
And you're seeing it. Watching some great players
in real time.
Yeah.
I mean, look, there are certain aspects to this, and I know that having seen a little bit of the huge amounts of confetti coming in on Twitter and other places, refuse to call it X, you know, around sort of the leadership and all the rest of it. You know, I think Joss. I'm not entirely sure that Joss was the right man to take over from Owen, although, again, you could point to that and go, well, who else at the time? And Owen is an incredibly difficult man to follow in terms of leadership. But it never struck me that it sat particularly well on his shoulders. You know, he's not as bulletproof as say Owen was. You know, Owen not demonstrative in any way, and neither is Joss. But Owen kind of was so singular and single minded, and you never got him to backtrack or anything. There's no way on earth that Owen would have turned around at the back end of the game of South Africa and said, "Well, you know what? I think we got selection wrong, and I think we got the toss wrong, and all the rest of it." He'd gone, no, we do it again. If I got the chance, I'd do it 100% the same thing, because that. He would say that, perhaps not believing it, but because the message goes to the guys in the dressing room, you know, follow me. These are the calls. I will take it on my shoulders, but this is what we're doing. And so, you know, for me, Joss has been unable perhaps to sort of raise whatever 11s he's been given. And let's face it, there've been a myriad of players who have had a go under his tenure. To kind of have that same sort of singular vision, that same sort of you know, Terminator style approach to the format, and I don't think that's him. It's not in his makeup, and you know, and perhaps the captaincy is something that will weigh too heavily upon him in order for him to be able to give of his very best as a batter. And we've spoken about that on many England captains, but I think that is certainly the case here. And so when you try to throw it forward and go, well, okay, well, who, you know, is Mott to blame? I have no idea, honestly. I have no idea whether he is to blame, because he has come in halfway through a World Cup cycle with somebody else's team, with a brand new captain, didn't get a chance to work with the last one. I think they overlapped by about a day in Amsterdam during that, well, it was fateful for me anyway, but that fateful that week in Amsterdam. And so, you know, he hasn't had the chance yet to put any sort of stamp upon an England 11, and he will get the chance to do that very, very shortly. And when we go to the West Indies in December, I'm expecting that there will be, you know, of the team that played today, perhaps, you know, Livingston.
Genuinely could be it.
That could be it. Livingston, and, you know, in terms of the squad, you've got Atkinson, Curran, Brooke, Cass, who's now out there, so those guys will be involved. And then it'll be the likes of Jack, Salt, Crawley, maybe Crawley captained against Ireland. Maybe they're looking, you know, that would be what I would do. I think, you know, Joss, by the time this competition is over, you say, thank you very much. Service has been excellent. We'll move on. And maybe if he has the appetite and he wants to be in the team as a player, then England will go, yeah, well, we'll take that any day. But I think the time
And you might come, split the captaincies as well within white ball cricket.
And keep him as the T20 captain? Yeah, possibly. Yeah. I mean, again, that would all very much depend on how he is at the end of it. I mean, you mentioned Ashes series. How many captains get seen off by those? And that this might be the final straw for him as a captain, but maybe not as a player. We will see. But as far as Mott is concerned, I would be generous and be inclined to say, okay, now's your time. You show us who you are and what you want your team to be over the next 4 years, and given the opportunity to do that.
Mm. I don't think this has got anything to do with what we've seen this afternoon necessarily. But I keep going back to Joe Root's quotes from that press conference a few days ago. And the more I think about it, the more surprising they become. But he is echoing what is being said elsewhere. And dare I say it, kind of echoing what we've talked about on this show. And you get it in
He's
the media a lot.
Big fan.
Oh, yeah, naturally.
He loves he loves the whiskey.
He does love he the loves whiskey, the whiskey. Rye. Sent me a message on New Year's Eve. There you go. But for him to say, well, we don't really know what the format's going to look like anyway, and if it's got much relevance anymore.
Mm.
For England's number three, to say that in the middle of a World Cup is mildly staggering to me. Now, that is obviously percolating away in the corners. And the ICC, I think George De Bell, on the cricketer, I think he ran the story probably elsewhere as well, that the ICC are going to be meeting as soon as this sort of piddling thing is done to find out what's left of the format. Matthew Hayden in our magazine mentioned it the other day, saying, well, yeah, most of it's irrelevant now anyway. Don't know what's going to happen. Mark Nicholas last week, MCC Prez, saying the same thing. Well, bilateral series, they're done and dusted. Mm. Forget about that. And that kind of tone can't fail to infiltrate the mindset of not just the players, but the whole culture of English cricket. And so we're left with this peculiar sort of mental state, right?
But it's happened before, right?
How do we respond to this when you're literally hearing one of the best players in the team, in the world, telling us, well, we're not really sure what this actually means anymore.
Yeah. England
psychically, that's a peculiar thing to have to get your head around.
England sort of said this, though, when they were previously not very good at white ball cricket. Graham Swann, when he was in the team, used to say that as well.
And the only difference, I think, this time is that a lot of other teams, I think, sneakily agree. And it's only simply because the landscape looks so different now than it did when Swanee was playing and talking about it. There weren't any other options, but there are so many other options. I mean, the whole contracts discussion is basically the only reason that England are doing what they've never done before in offering up 3-year, 2-year, multiple year deals is because they're trying to stop people from going off and earning their money doing something else. And so the spectre of T20 cricket, of franchise leagues, hangs heavy over the entire tournament. And putting England aside for a minute, geez, this tournament could do with a decent game. I mean, crikey, we've had, what, 25, 26, 27 games yet and not a single good one amongst them. Seen some extraordinary performances, as you would expect in a World Cup. But it's been a slog to watch. And listen, not complaining, folks. This is what we do for a living. And most people will give their right, left and arms or whatever to do so. But my God, it's been hard work.
Yeah. Well, on that note, that's it for part one. In part two, we'll talk about Sri Lanka and answer your questions.
We were just getting going.
Phil, as terrible as England were, Sri Lanka were really on it with the ball. Matthews and Tikshana gave nothing away. And Kumara is a guy who, they got a graphic up on screen. He is genuinely one of the quickest bowlers in the competition. He took 3 wickets. Sri Lanka were excellent, and they lost those 2 early wickets. It could have gone downhill for them, and they won at a canter.
Yeah, they're a really likeable team. Been saying it for a while. I love watching Tikshana bowl. He's got real personality. And as you say, Kumara is a wholehearted kind of cricketer, as they all are. They're sometimes sort of discarded or disregarded sometimes. And we're probably guilty a bit of it as well. But they've beaten England, I think, 4 times in a row now in World Cups.
I think that might be 5.
Not since 99, I think.
That England have
beaten them at World Cup.
Right.
Yeah. Well, we definitely didn't beat them in 96.
No.
No. God, no.
No.
Definitely
not.
Obviously, they turned England over on their own patch 4 years ago as well.
Yeah.
You know. And we also have the marvellous Kusal Mendes run out as well, right?
Yeah.
So it might be symptomatic of England's muddle and sadness, but it's also a great bit of cheek, right?
Yeah.
You know, you have to admire it. Again, very, very likeable cricketer. Nisanka is a quality opening bat who's added a lot more shots in the last 12 months or so than what we saw initially when he came in as a bit of a prodigy. And the number 4, whose name, Samarawickrama,
yeah.
Near enough. You know, made 100 last week, batted beautifully and took the piss out of England today. And any sense of a mini wobble was expunged, as Mark said earlier, you know, in a matter of minutes, really, as soon as the lad walked out to bat. They're a very easy on the eye cricket team.
Mm.
They just lack a little bit of that final component, really.
And Angelo Matthews aside, actually very young side, very young team.
Yeah, yeah. I could not believe that. I thought he'd be maybe in the comm box or in hospitality. No,
I saw the wicket go down and I didn't realise it was him. I thought, who's it? Who's this lad they've just thrown the ball to?
I really want to see more 75 mile per hour dobbers bowl in ODI cricket.
You might well do. We keep, yeah, we might. Well, you might see, you know, a few more Colin de Grandhomes. He was almost the hero of the Lords final.
I think it makes, you know, Chris Silverwood, obviously ex England coach. He knows what works against his England side.
Well, there's a thing, right? You know, so we've had Jonathan Trott last week. The guys who sort of whose time around the England team sort of ended in a fashion that neither of them would have liked. Jonathan Trott as coach of Afghanistan, and now Chris Silverwood as coach of Sri Lanka. I mean, Spoons is going to be absolutely that's going to taste good this evening for him.
Is it ever?
After the way things ended for him,
and he's done a really good job generally, hasn't he?
Yeah. And the thing with Sri Lanka always is and always will be that they've got so many unbelievably talented players there, whether it be, you know, mystery spin, whether it be sort of strangely actioned quick bowlers. Batters have always been so graceful, so good, and kind of the only thing that really has ever held them back ever since has been kind of like the influx of finance to the bigger teams and the lack of it for them, really. That's it. The love of the game is still as strong over there as it ever was. And they are, you know, they're one of the teams that make the sort of the international stage a damn sight richer and always will be, as long as they're still able to compete. And they've just shown today that they've got some fabulous cricketers and always produce fabulous cricketers. Great coaching, great love for the sport. And, you know, given a fair win, they could be back up amongst the very best again. Probably not in this World Cup, but at some point.
Yeah, and just as an aside, just going back to the format question, you know, spare a thought for these young players in particular, right? Yeah, they're not on the highest platform of the game. You know, they don't have the benefit of the fluke of being born in India, for example. They don't have an enormous amount of resources behind their country's cricket. But this is not just a career high. This defines who you are as a cricketer, really. There are some test players in there and they punch above their weight. They were a couple of games away from making the WTC final. But you can't say to any of these cricketers, well, sorry about 50 over cricket, but it's rather out of vogue now. So, you know, move along. Go and find somewhere else to play.
Oh, I bet they can.
Yeah. But the same applies to, even more so to the Netherlands, for example. You know, try telling these cricketers, Baz de Leeder, Scott Edwards, these kinds of cricketers, sorry, but, you know, we've had enough of it now. As if the kind of the disdainful attitude that we've allowed to seep in over here and in other parts of the sort of first world of cricket, the power brokers. Well, think about the impact of this kind of disdain towards the format to the emergent nations, the lesser finance nations, the lesser resource nations, because it's an ugly stance to take, I think, and it disregards and dismisses the significance of it to players like these Sri Lankans that we mentioned.
Well, Sri Lanka now have two wins and face Afghanistan next, so one of those sides will have three wins after six games. So it is just about possible that one of them at least challenges in the final week for a place in the final four. And a reminder, England...
How is it just about possible that we're still in it? How?
Because if England win the next four games, which, you know, it's a big if.
Yeah.
They finish on five wins. And there's a massive game for the tournament on Saturday, Australia-New Zealand. If Australia win that...
Yeah.
It's very possible that they could finish on four or five wins.
Yeah.
So it is still just about possible.
And the way Australia have suddenly kind of roared into some sort of form. The fact that it's New Zealand as well, because they don't tend to lose to them very often. That could very
David
well
Warner's looking good as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Every time he gets run, I see your little face.
People throw it on the floor when he's batting and don't run him out. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. But he's looking real good.
Is there any theory that anyone can cobble together regarding the absence of close games? Or is it just weirdness, being weird again?
Ben talked about it quite well yesterday. The most compelling argument I've heard is that the attitude to chasing has just changed, and that's come from T20 cricket. In the past, it was you hang in there, bat deep. That's kind of gone. There's been quite a few chases of 280 that have been done in 35 overs. That didn't used to happen even 4 years ago as much. So And also, there are just quite a few mismatches in this tournament. You'd like to think that everyone could beat everyone, and that sort of still just about applies. But when there are some teams who just can't score 350, and there have been quite a few times where teams batting first have scored 350. Jimbo asks, is this worse than 2015?
Probably.
Yeah, because the expectations were pretty low in 2015. Yeah.
Cool, next. Anthony asks, are teams able to drop out of the World Cup halfway through? The answer is no.
Could argue that it's happened already. But,
yeah, true.
But, and much Will, like Somerset declaring all those years ago, that's not allowed.
The Brian Rose game. Mm. Good shout.
Will asks, after the World Cup, we have to play a 5-match test series away in India as well. What other sports do you recommend watching in order to pretend cricket doesn't exist until we're back bullying West Indies on green tops at Trent Bridge next summer?
It's going to be the Ben Duckett 5-test series. Don't worry about it.
PSL will be on.
He's going to sweep Ashwin with his eyes closed.
PSL will be on. Don't worry. It'll be fine.
Anyway, still a good 3 weeks to go, 4 weeks to go. Cheers, Phil. Cheers, Butch. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Wisden Cricket World Cup Daily Podcast, powered by Seen. Once again, Seen are our video partners on wisden.com, helping us to deliver a more engaging and immersive viewing experience across mobile, tablet and desktop. Head to the link in the description to find out more about them. Podcast Network.